Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whittaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. From time to time, I have the veritable honour to interview people on my podcast who have made a hugely significant impact on the private rental sector. And my guest today is no exception. When I tell you a little bit about him, I think you're going to identify who it is immediately. He regularly appears in the national media, including television and radio, and he has spent over 25 years in the legal field helping landlords and letting agents with problem tenants. So when I start to complain about HMOs and council tax, that's nothing compared to my guest today. He's often referred to as the landlord's friend, and he's often regularly asked to comment in the media, not only because he's well known, but because he knows his stuff, and he isn't afraid to give his point of view. Amongst others, he's the founder of Landlord Action, and actually until recently, he was the presenter of the TV show Nightmare Tenants Slum Landlords. So I'm delighted and honoured to welcome our very special guest today, Paul Champlina.
Pleasure to be here.
So Paul, could you just start by helping us to understand, how did you first get into this industry?
Well, my background was legal. I left school, no qualifications at 16, just wanted to work. I was very, quite entrepreneurial at a very young age, actually. Always good at sales and direct contact with people. But I ended up working in a law firm doing debt recovery, really randomly, and worked in the recession in 88, 90. My starting salary in 1987 was $4,000 a year, believe it or not, I'm that old. And worked in the recessions, you know, I was doing house repossessions, I was doing court hearings at 16, 17 years old, really, really young. I wasn't cut out to be a solicitor, didn't want to be a solicitor, wasn't cut out academically, as I said. I've got a concentration span for a gnat, to be honest, I'm that bad. And then what happened was, while having my legal profession, moving back to London, I ended up wanting to do work and do something a little bit different, so I became a bailiff. And I became a private investigator and a process server and a debt collector, but I was also doing evictions, working with a firm of solicitors so I could issue claims. So I was a bit of a jack of all trades. I had a little tiny office, started when I was skimp, didn't come for money or anything like that, wasn't into property, land and all that. I bought my first flat when I was 23, 24, it was $40,000. I remember it was a flat in Northwest London, a one bed flat. And I actually ended up renting it out for 2 years, but I started Landlord Action in 2000 with my old business partner because I evicted 23 illegal immigrants from a three bed house.
Wow.
I did it for fixed fees. No one was ever doing fixed fees. So serving a notice, getting the court, getting the bailiffs in. And then out of that, we came up with the idea of Landlord Action. And that was in 2000. And then early on, I understood media, I understood PR very early on. We had a half a page editorial in the Evening Standard 6 months after trading, and it all went ballistic. And then, of course, the buy-to-let boom started in 2003, you know, and then I did my first TV program a year after starting Landlord Action. I've done the best part of most probably 600-700 talks, and then obviously the webinars, podcasts, and they all went mad during COVID. But yeah, so I did that.
Amazing. So you started very young, obviously, but you had a passion. It seems to me that your personality lent itself to this, because I think a lot of people feel that, you know, the whole process, let's say, of eviction is quite adversarial and it is quite combative. And of course, what you're trying to do is you're trying to take somebody that's living in a property that shouldn't be there. You want to get them out. So, of course, it's got that element to it. But your personality is quite gregarious. You're bubbly, you're very much a people person. And I wonder if that's kind of added to your ability to do this, because you get on with people, you're able to perhaps find a practical solution to some of these problems.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I mean, look, people think that I go around knocking on doors evicting people. I don't do that. I did it for the TV show. I have a team of 23 staff at Landlord Action. We do 2,500 instructions a year. We're regulated firm and solicitors. I'm used to confrontation because in my former life before Landlord Action, I was a bailiff. So I've been threatened. I've had a knife pulled on me. You name it. I could tell you a whole different podcast on that story alone. But yeah, I know how to talk to people. I'm a real people person. I suppose really the strength of my brand Landlord Action and my brand Paul Shapley has been my personality, most definitely, being confident. But I think a lot of the confidence when it comes to the public speaking, the training, like this week alone, I've done 3-4 talks. I've done loads of podcasts and I get reached out to. But one thing people don't realise is that in 2017, I sold Landlord Action to Hamilton Fraser. So Hamilton Fraser, we own some very well-known brands in the private rental sector. We own My Deposits, the deposit scheme. We own the Property Redress scheme. We own Client Money Protect. They're all government-backed schemes for landlords and letting agents. And I think really the most important legislation that came in most probably was 2007. I'm sure we're going to talk about legislation later on. We also, I run Landlord Zone, which is obviously one of the biggest landlord portals. We run Total Landlord Insurance, one of the biggest landlord insurance providers in the marketplace for HMO landlords. So we've got all these different brands. So my main job is I'm on a board of a company and oversee sales for the group. But part of my brief is education, is media and PR, right? Lots of content. So that's been the strength and that's been part of my brief when I've come up to a corporate company. But yeah, Landlord Action, I would say now, and we're now in 2023, since I started the business, I still run Landlord Action. I've got a team of people and solicitors, paralegals, whatever. We are the busiest we've ever been in history.
Amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
Busier. But we're going to get busier because of what's happening in the climate and the renters reform and the abolishment of Section 21.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and we will come on to that because that's really pertinent. So just take us back to what things were like for landlords when you first set up Landlord Action. You'd obviously had some, there was obviously a need in the marketplace for you to offer what you did, that kind of, full package of serving notice, evicting tenants, et cetera, taking landlords through that whole kind of process. But what was the landscape like at that time?
So that's a really good question. So we started in 2000. People were renting, obviously. Don't forget the first bit of legend. You used to have a short-hold tenancy agreements, and that was it. And then, of course, you had the deposit scheme that became mandatory. And obviously, in my later life, I've ended up working for My Deposits. I never would have predicted that. That was actually most probably some of the best bit of legislation that came out because the amount of landlords and tenants that argue at the end of tenancy and some landlords try it on. So that stopped lots of spurious cases at court. But really, the landscape, the private rental sector was 10% then. It wasn't 20%. It's doubled since 2003, 2004, as such. And then you had the buy-to-let boom. You had the boom of cheap money, and eventually we came back to cheap money. And then 2003, I did my first property show in 2001. So I've been doing property shows, 22, all the property shows. And then, of course, there was no money down deals and people buying properties. And then you had the likes of Inside Track and they were buying, buy this and that. And it went mental. People were buying properties with credit cards and all that type of stuff. It was mental.
You also had Sale and Rent Back, didn't you?
Yeah, Sale and Rent Back. And I was involved with part of that legislation called Saab. I've been involved with so much legislation and working groups over the years. If I just talk about my 23-year career while running Landlord Action, and working with I was involved with the deregulation at the drafting of the new Section 21 notice. I gave evidence relating to retaliation eviction. I helped bring the squatters law that came in 2012. So I do a lot of stuff like that. And then obviously I have, I will always, and I'll never deviate from the way that I speak and the way that I feel. And I wrote, it's actually very handy, I wrote two books, which I'm very proud of. I'm live in my office here now. I wrote two books called The Landlord's Friend, with Kate Faulkner.
Yeah.
And I'll do another one. That'll be a complete rewrite. As you can imagine, 2024, all the regulation will come in. So, yeah, the landscape of the landlords changed. It was easy. I could meet someone in the pub, shake their hand. They pay me a month's deposit, not put the deposit in deposit scheme. We're still getting landlords now in 2023 that call our Landlord Action advice line that haven't put deposit in deposit scheme, which is ridiculous. and you could be fined three times plus the deposit. And then, of course, the game has changed. And obviously, then we had the 2008 crash. Some landlords lost their properties. Bearing in mind, you know, in 88, 90, the interest rate used to be 15%. We now have an interest base rate of 5%. And of course, if we look, and landlords have had it good for a long time, let's be very honest about that. They've had 0% interest rates for the best part of 10, 12 years. And money was cheap, money was free. You know, people have done really well out of that. And now we're in a cost of living crisis, an inflation crisis, a rental stock crisis. And I've never seen so many landlords, smaller landlords, exit the marketplace at the moment. But there is some good out of that, because I think 75% of the properties that are being sold by landlords are being bought by other landlords.
Yeah. Do you think that landlords are also getting out, though, because, they're squeezed. Obviously, Section 24 has made a massive impact in many people who had properties in their own name, et cetera, et cetera. Not only that, of course, since the Council for Mortgage Lenders brought a new regulation after the global financial crash that you had to put in 25% deposit. Prior to that, you could buy a house, literally, you could get 100% mortgage to buy a buy-to-let property before that. So lots and lots has changed over 15 years. And as you say, the growth has happened. We went from 10% private rental sector to 20% private rental sector. But there's a sense in the media in which landlords are always the baddie. You know, we're always the greedy landlord. We're always the bad person in the partnership, and the tenant is always good. Now, of course, the media always wants to polarize people's views and, you know, stir up emotion and so on. But do you think that has had any impact on people as well, feeling that they're terrorized as landlords and they just don't want to sort of wear that badge anymore?
So look, if you keep prodding the dog will bite back. And some of the dogs are biting back because they're serving Section 21 notices and they're selling their properties, right? You know, everything you said is 100%. You know, it all started when George Osborne made that announcement about, you know, what business gets taxed on turnover, not profit? I don't understand. So there's two. And then, of course, you had the 3% stamp duty concession. You had the Deregulation Act. I mean, obviously, a lot of landlords are fearful regulation. But, you know, generally, landlords are flexible and adaptable. They're quite a resilient bunch. Then, of course, you had the announcement of EPCs. That was a worry. That's been kicked into the long grass for 2028. And then, of course, you had the HMO regulation that came in 2018. I was on that working group about the minimum home standard. And then, of course, naturally, you had the real debacle of Liz Truss and the interest rates, and everything shot up. And then from landlords paying next to nothing on base rates of, you know, 1.5% trackers, then those landlords, you know, their two, three year terms have come to an end, and they're now up to 6%. I mean, I've got a pal of mine who was paying 350 a month. His installment's gone up to 1,100 quid a month. He's a landlord, right? So, you know, he might be making 1,500 quid a month on, you know, on the rent or whatever. So there's that. And then, of course, you've got the abolishment of Section 21, which is a real worry. Landlords worrying about getting their properties back. Then the anti-landlord rhetoric. I mean, I am literally constantly in the press because I'm getting contact. I mean, like last week, I did three or four radio interviews about landlords leaving the sector and what it means. I mean, look, I was in the Mail last week, and look at that headline: buy to let apocalypse. You know, and landlords leaving the sector.
So let me ask you then, Paul. You've advised government. Obviously, you've been involved in lots of working groups. You know, you're well known not only in the private rental sector industry, but also in government. You've supported the breadth and depth of housing. You've supported the free market in private rental. Yes, okay, we want standards. We need minimum standards to ensure safety and security for tenants. But on the other hand, we also want to make sure that there is enough choice for tenants and that there's enough landlords out there providing choice so that actually rents stay low. Why is the government not listening to you?
So it's all political, most probably, is the answer to your saying. You look, look, I've never felt so much sympathy for a tenant as I have now, right? Look, don't get me wrong, I've been in a program called Nightmare Tenant Slum Landlords, which is the worst of the worst. The worst of the tenants, the worst of the landlords. Let me get right. And those landlords that are on the programme, you know, that use or have had problems. A lot of the time is they don't know what a reference is properly, they don't, you know, and they try and do it themselves, and that's the biggest problem. Let me be very clear, and obviously the listeners you have of HMOs, managing an HMO is the hardest thing to ever do, right? In all property management, you really got to be really, really resilient. You've got to end up being a council worker, a social worker.
You need a parent.
A parent. You've got to be a therapist. You've got to be a debt collector. You've got to be a mediator. It's really, really difficult. So the problem you've got is you've got 11 million tenants, 2 million landlords. Okay. The Renters Reform Bill has been brought on the back of tenants having greater security. Short-term tenants won't have greater security. They're going to have worse security because landlords are getting out.
Yep.
Decent tenants will be served Section 21 notices. Historically, landlords haven't been putting rents up. They only put rents up when their interest rates got whacked up, right? They've never kept up to market value. That's a fact, actually. And then, of course, you know, I mean, one thing that I do with regard to my job is next Tuesday, I'll be doing free talks at the Landlord Investment Show. I speak to landlords, I speak to tenants, I speak to letting agents, I speak to anyone, I speak to environmental officers. I make sure I've got my ear to the ground with regard to the industry. Is, you know, you're getting 50, 60 tenants fighting over one property. I've never known anything like this. For landlords who are listening to your show, right, it's actually a great place if you're in it long term. You know, have you had a business review? Are you involved in property technology to save time and systemize your processes? Okay. What's your pre-qualifying process like when it comes to finding tenants? Okay. What is your offering? How good is your product on HMO? Actually, because of the unaffordability, I mean, a tenant now is paying 35% best off their wages going towards their rent. That's a lot of money.
Which is why we're seeing such huge demand for HMO rooms.
Of course, that's the whole point. And that was my next point I was going to say to you. So people can't afford single dwellings. They need shared accommodation, albeit HMOs, you know, with shared common paths. So actually demand is going to be higher. Okay. How does a landlord navigate that with regard to the HMOs? And of course, if you look at landlords where you're at now, The Renters Reform Bill came in because, of course, non-decent home standards. They are saying the private rental sector stands at 21%, albeit those figures came out two and a half years ago. I still think, and I still say this, and I'm involved in another program, and I can't say what it is, but involved with regard to, I personally think that social housing accommodation is far worse than the private rental sector, right? I don't believe the figures that are being quoted out there. And I featured on ITV a few times with Dan Hewitt, who's exposed, you know, there being mushrooms grown on a wall for one of the councils in London and whatever. And it's horrendous. And I really feel for those tenants. But obviously, if you look at the private rental sector, it really shouldn't be housing as many social housing tenants as it does. And then the problem you've got with the abolishment of Section 21 and everything that's coming in economy wise and rents going through the roof, those tenants are going to be the biggest losers in everything. You know, statistically, a housing benefit tenant can stay in your property longer and look after it. But I mean, the average term of a tenancy now is about 4 years and 4 months. It will increase. But the biggest fear for tenants, and I speak to tenants, I've got two tenants that work for me in Landlord Action. They've both had Section 21s, right? Is the fear, and there is a fear, tenant fear of the landlord selling their property. But all this stuff that's happening and all the stuff that may happen in the future, a lot of it is confidence, you know. And some landlords are ashamed to be called landlords, right? But we have to change the mindset. We have to actually say, actually, being a landlord is a profession, a job, and this is what we do. Rather than we're greedy so-and-sos. Because you didn't hear the great news stories that landlords were doing during COVID for their tenants, did you?
Quite. Absolutely. That's a really good point. And I think we do offer solutions. We're offering accommodation, much needed accommodation into the sector, and often a big variety of accommodation. Like many other landlords, I know we've got a wide selection. We've got flats, we've got family homes, we've got HMOs, we've got lots of different types. So hopefully if somebody came to us and said, you know, I'm desperate, we might be able to try and find them something. And also with the network that we've got, we can also phone up other people. And often we are providing those kind of solutions. Now, I would just want to ask you a little bit about HMOs and evictions. You're an eviction specialist. From your experience, Paul, do you find that it's easier to evict a tenant from an HMO, or do you find that actually you almost don't get to court because there's a sense in which if somebody's living in a shared house, the shame of being evicted means that they kind of leave as soon as they're served their notice? What's your experience of that, of comparing HMOs to single lets in terms of evictions?
Right, so there's no right answer for that, all right? It's complex. So I'm going to delve deeper now. So, you know, let's look at an HMO. You're renting a 6-bedroom HMO in Portsmouth, for argument's sake. Okay, so the landlord has to go through all the legislation, get it licensed, and obviously we're not going to have a podcast about licensing, because I'm sure we'll be all day. There'll be a lot of groans and moans, I'm sure. But you have a license, you get your six different tenants in there. Do the tenants get on with each other? It's like a matchmaker. You've got to understand the matchmaking process. Do they get on with each other? Okay. What's their work pattern? What's their background? Are they foreign national? What's their religious beliefs? Okay. Is there issues with regard to mental health, which was a massive increase, which happened in HMOs? We saw a big increase, and I speak to local police. I train police, right? And I've been on the phone to police giving advice about landlord and tenant of lots of landlords doing unlawful evictions in HMOs during COVID. And then, of course, getting access for landlords is a killer, right? Getting access. And then, of course, you have the antisocial behaviour aspect, which is a real worry. And as I said, I spoke to 120 landlords literally 2 days ago who are HMO landlords. And the fear is when Section 21 goes, how do you get rid of antisocial behaviour tenants where other tenants in that block are fearful? You know, and there's been a whole lot of stuff, and it is really, really troubling. So the answer to the question is, if it's rent arrears and you can prove the rent arrears, it's normally standard. But the problem is you're in the luck of the gods with regard to what court you're at and how quickly that can be done. We have a bailiff shortage at the moment. We have a judge shortage at the moment. You know, you can't give it a Section 21. You've got to have the ground strengthened, which is what's going to happen. And then there's got to be a special list or some sort of special priority when it comes to antisocial behaviour, and I've advised the government about this. You know, the three most common reasons why a landlord is using Section 21 at the moment: I'm selling, rent arrears, antisocial behaviour, or the fourth one would be, I've been told to stay put by the council so I can be rehoused, right? So, you know, what does it look post? How does it look like with regard to periodic tenancies? How do I change my business as an HMO landlord? What do I do? How do I foolproof it? Can I get rent guarantee? You know, there's all these type of things. You know, what are my communications like? You know, because the problem is if one tenant realizes the other tenant's paying, then he's going to stop paying. And then it's like a domino effect. So you've got to be careful about that. And you've got to be able to make sure that you mark the tenant's card, in the sense that, because actually what you do need to say as a landlord, I've got plenty of other tenants that want your room, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly, and put some social pressure on them actually to pull themselves up, because otherwise the likelihood is that they're going to be out of that room or out of that property, and actually where are they then going to live?
Well, they're going to end up and pay more rent and move out the area.
Yes, exactly. So it sounds like from the point of view of the Renters Reform Bill, I mean, that there's going to be, as you say, there's already rumblings in the industry. There's already people saying, that's it, this is the sort of tin hat, you know, this is the straw that broke the camel's back. I've had enough, I'm leaving the industry now. Do you see much positive about it for landlords?
Yeah, I do. Look, I think, look, when there's upheaval, that creates opportunity. So you as a landlord, you might say, I want to add to my portfolio. I've just been waiting to try and find the right thing at the right price, you know, to add to my portfolio. So other landlords are buying properties. Let's be clear about this. If you've got cash is king, obviously, in this market, because we are looking at more of a downturn. We don't know about inflation. We don't know what the rate's going to be like, whatever. And some of those landlords have done really well. Landlords 15, 20, 25 years, they've made a lot of money, right? And then obviously selling properties in situ. I think if you look at the Renters Reform Bill, the two glaring things that stick out for me is the abolishment of Section 21. How does that work? You know, how can you bring mediation in? Yes, it can stop off some of the court cases and try and mediate and work the tenant out quicker. And then periodic tenancies, that's been a real worry for student HMO landlords, obviously, especially, you know, student landlords, because, of course, purpose-built blocks are exempt from the new periodic. So there has been pressure, and I believe there's been a bit of backtracking by Gove to say they are going to consider that. I think everything else is really actually good for the industry. A property portal where everything is compliant and logged against it, a bit like an MOT for a car. Landlord redress. I mean, no, we run a redress scheme, but all letting agents have to be part of a redress scheme. Why don't landlords? That's 2.3 million hours. I actually think landlord training should be something. I actually think RentSmart Wells in that sense has been quite good, because I think there's too many people that manage properties that should not be managing properties. Especially, I think I've you know, I'm quite outspoken about the industry of rent to rent and guaranteed rent. I've been involved in that industry for a long, long time. I think that, and that is on the trading standards radar, and I've been speaking to them about that. There's people doing rent to rent that shouldn't be doing it. You know, if there's a void, they end up keeping the money, not passing it on. How do the landlord get the property back? Are they in breach of HMO licensing? They're on the hook to be fined. There's a whole lot of stuff going on there. I think saying that you can't have a DSS tenant and, you know, that's discrimination. Why wouldn't you do that? You know, I think having, I think also, you know, if you've got an HMO, you know, can you bring a pet into an HMO? Most probably you can't. There's got to be some further direction on that.
And but also children, that's the other issue.
And children, no children. I think there's got to be some direct. I got asked those questions last week. I think also the consultation of VOA with regard to council
tax.
That's a big issue for HMO landlords, because of course you can build that in the price. If it's separate, how does that eat into your profit? I get that. Then, you know what? The devil's in the detail. I would say to all your landlords, don't panic. Just watch and wait. It's like the EPCs. I still think you just watch and wait.
Yes.
Why would you worry about, you know, it's 2018, 2028, watch and wait. You know, you want to add more value. You want tenants to save money on utilities and stuff like that. But if you've got, and I use this example, you've got a two-bed terraced in County Durham, and you've got a tenant on $6,000 a year, universal credit, and it's going to cost you the best part of $15,000 to get it up to spec, well, what are you going to do? You're most probably going to sell the property. So where does that property go? The first-time buyers, they're finding it harder with regard to stress testing, with regard to finance, so like along with landlords. There's a high, you know, we've had years and years and years of political, whether it be red or blue, yeah, or blue and yellow, right, of a political, a bit of political neglect with regard to housing. And, you know.
Yes. And of course, one of the biggest problems is the fact they haven't built enough houses.
Of course. You know,
the reason why the PRS is in this state is because
we're topping it up, aren't we?
Exactly. The real answer is let's build more houses.
And it's social housing. Social housing is the biggest problem. Mm. Right. We have more social housing, it's less pressure on the PRS, and then it's fit to purpose more, you know. Mm. You know, I'll give an example. I put a box in, a charity boxing event on every year. I did it last week, and the hotel is a Holiday Inn. It's got a couple of hundred rooms or whatever. It's been closed for 3 years for temporary accommodation homeless for Barnet Council. So we have a real temporary accommodation crisis, a real social housing crisis. Tenants, normal tenants are being outpriced in the market. I think something's going to be done. And there was an announcement yesterday before, and I work very closely with the NRLA, that rent capping is off the table. And it was announced that it was announced by Lisa Nandy, the deputy.
Yes, that's right.
But obviously things can change. I still think that there's got to be some sort of provision that we'd be putting there for tenants, because it is unsustainable, I think, with regard to costings for tenants.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting. I mean, my view is that actually, if we just had more supply, then we probably wouldn't have to worry about rent controls. You know, all the time when the private rental sector was growing, actually that kind of kept rents down, because, you know, people had competition and they could say, well, could, you know, they could do some deals as well.
Now there's less commission. I mean, look,
exactly.
Can Section 24 be reversed? Who knows? If you want something like that to be reversed, the whole industry has to come together. You've got to shout loudly. It's literally got to be put in a way that you get real, real decent numbers. And actually, the benefits of that will be passed on to tenants, which is keeping rents lower.
Yes.
Landlords in the centre. Or you have some sort of landlord incentive scheme, which they used to have or whatever. But the thing is, it's money. Where's the money coming from? You know, how many strikes are we having at the moment? Everyone's striking. You've got the consultants, you've got the doctors, you've got the bin men I saw the other day. You know when things are getting tough, when barristers start striking, and barristers are striking. So It is hitting the fan. It's going to get tough, and it's going to get tougher, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a doom and gloom, but hey, I will win it.
But then, on the other hand,
you need landlords.
And also, you've been through, like I've been, I mean, I first invested in 1997. That's when I bought my very first rental property. So like you, I've been in the industry a long time. But and I, like you, I've seen it grow, you know, seen it expand massively and then contract again. I lived through the era of those very high interest rates when I had my own property in the early 1990s, you know, getting the letter from the Halifax saying, right, your interest rate's going up to 12, 13, 14%, thinking, good grief, how am I going to afford this?
Yes, of course.
You get through it. And I think, that, as you said earlier, if you're in it for the long haul, if you're committed and you're going to make it work, you will make it work. Yes. And over time, if you live through those highs and lows, that's how you make the money, is by keeping going, even when things...
Listen, my advice for landlords, if you don't need to sell, don't sell. The biggest challenge for some landlords that have been in this game 15, 20, 25 years is capital gains, right? That's going to be the challenge, you know.
Yeah.
If you are going to buy, well, then you need to be looking at a corp rating.
That's
how does that work and pulling out dividends and all that type of stuff. But you know what? Actually, as a landlord, yes, there's loads of stuff coming in and we can feel that we need a bit of love and we've been vilified and all that type of stuff. But just be professional. You know, at the end of the day, your tenant is your customer, because without any tenants, none of us would be here, would they?
Exactly. That's a really good
point. And people forget that. People think tenants are a burden. Oh, geez, a tenant. So I really have it. Maybe at my old age, I'm getting a bit softer, but it's not. At the end of the day, tenants are really struggling out there and it's tough. It is tough. And don't forget, you know, we talk about the 88-90 recession, you know, and like I said, I was going in and out of the court obtaining repossession orders for the banks and builders. I did 13 in one day once at 16, 17 years old at Brighton County Court. Is we have an issue whereby if something doesn't happen soon, we will have a crisis that we've never experienced in the private rental sector. But you've got to think of what's going to happen in the political landscape. You know, the mental reform bill is not going to come in, but you know, it's going to, you know, maybe mid-24, right? Possibly another year, Section 21. And actually, the Conservatives want to try and do something before the next election. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's 10, 11 million renters out there. That's a lot of votes. Mm. And I get that and I understand that. So yeah, there's lots of things that may or may not happen. I think you could end up driving yourself mad, to be honest.
Well, what I say to my team and to anybody who works with me is every day is a school day, and there's never a dull moment when you're in property, because whether it's the you've got an issue on a property, or you're looking at a deal, or you're dealing with a difficult tenant, or you're dealing with a great tenant, or you're integrating a new piece of legislation.
Yes.
There's always something to keep you occupied. It's certainly an industry that keeps you on your toes. There's no doubt about that.
And you never stop learning, 100%.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, you've been very, very generous with your time. And, you know, I'm really, really grateful that you've been able to come on this today and share some of your experience, your knowledge, your input, your influence as well. Really, really powerful. And I think I would like to say thank you on behalf of all the HMO landlords out there who need somebody like you, who is looking at the broad brush of the private rental sector. HMOs is just one section of it, of course. And you're looking at the bigger picture, and everything you do, it's incredibly valued, and we really are incredibly grateful.
That's really kind words. Thank you. I appreciate it. And you know what? When I do hear things like that, and it is nice to hear. So thank you so much. And HMO landlords are really, really important. Just make sure that you've got to realise now, for HMO landlords, if there's an opportunity to increase to your portfolio, that makes sense. The supply and demand. You're going to have more and more and more and more tenants that want HMOs because of the affordability issue. Make sure that your offering is a great offering, okay? You know, and I think really what's, bearing in mind what's going to happen in the landscape of, you know, am I doing my pre-qualification process of referencing right? How can I improve that? You know, what? Because, you know, at the end of the day, you get one bad egg in an HMO, dare I say it can be absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, you're right. That mix is really important, isn't it? And that's where good management comes in. And whether you're doing it or you're giving it to somebody else, make sure the management is top notch, because that makes all the difference to how that HMO works. So yeah, fantastic. Well, listen, Paul, I shall love you and leave you, let you get on with the probably other very important jobs that you have to do today. What we'd love to do is to, in the podcast notes, write some blurb about you, what you do, and how people can contact your companies. Yes. Yes. If they need support, they need advice or help. And of course, you offer many other services because of these other businesses that you are now head of, and that is part of the Hamilton Fraser Group. And we'd love to know about those. So I'll get some details from you. We'll add those to the podcast notes. But I just want to say thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure. Mr. Paul Shavlina.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.